2053. Teresa, you want to?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2053 was pre-session filed on behalf of the Public Utility Commission. It modifies the base on which the fee imposed on electric utilities to support Public Utility Commission operations is determined. And committee members, you have a dash one amendment in front of you from the PUC, which modifies provisions of the bill. And the amendment has been agreed upon by the public utilities affected by the measure.
Great. I'm going to call Lee Beyer and Rick Willis, please. Go ahead, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, I'm Lee Beyer, Chairman of the Oregon Public Utility Commission, here today to ask your support for House Bill 2053. This is a fairly simple little bill, I think, simple from us, but very important to us. What the bill does is it addresses the calculation of fees paid to the Public Utility Commission by the investor-owned utilities, that's specifically PGE, Pacific Court, and Idaho Power. It returns the calculation of these of the amount of electric utilities submit to the PUC from one based on kilowatt hours throughput at the meter to back to a gross utility fee of no more than 0.25%. That's the system that we use for all other utilities that we regulate. Again, this formula was applied, the throughput formula was applied previously. Excuse me. I didn't have any water with me.
That's okay. I've been coughing all week.
That's one of those things. The thing's going around. I've been here too long, I think. Start again. This is the formula that was applied before 1999 and is consistent with the other regulated utilities that pay fees to the PUC. The bill puts a cap on the wholesale sales of no more than 0.25% of the utility's revenues from retail customers. We anticipate that the passage of this bill will prevent a funding shortfall for foreseeable future. Thank you very much.
See how friendly this committee is, Mr. Chairman.
Overall, the PUC fee calculations under the current fee structure are expected to remain fairly flat. The telecommunications industry projected gross receipts will decrease between 2006 and 2011 based on customers shifting from standard telephone lines to other technologies such as wireless that do not pay fees at all. Staff projects an annual decrease in fees paid by the telecommunication providers of about 4.2%. At the same time, staff projects collections from the energy industry to increase at a rate of about 1% a year. Revenue from the energy industry is substantially larger than the revenue from the telecommunication industry, so the 1% revenue increase offsets the loss in telecommunication industries, leaving revenues overall for the PUC about flat. The problem is that the PUC is losing ground because of inflation. In 1997, in the anticipation that the legislature would change the way residential customers purchase their electricity from suppliers, standard suppliers, changed it from the utilities to a myriad of suppliers, we changed from the gross receipts fee to a throughput fee. Obviously, that didn't happen. So we're back in this problem. So. Yes, where we're at now is trying to go back, sort of back to the future, if you will, trying to get back to the formula that we were using before that tracks more closely with inflation and keeps us fairly solidly funded so that we can protect ratepayers as the legislature intended us to do. We have had a couple of little changes in the bill. That's your dash one amendments. Mr. Willis has worked this out with utilities. We've met with all three utilities as well as the customer groups. To my knowledge, I believe we have general support and no opposition to the bill. Mr. Chair, with that, I would answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Committee, have any questions, ladies and gentlemen? If not, thank you very much and have a good weekend.
Thank you.
I'm going to call Sean Miller, Tom Gallagher, and Jeff Bossinet, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of Pacific Corp, an electric utility that does business in Oregon as Pacific Power, And we are here to support House Bill 2053 with the Dash 1 amendments that changes the kilowatt per hour fee-based system to the gross revenue fee-based system as described by Chair Beyer. I believe it's a less volatile funding mechanism for the PUC, and it would not have any significant impact on the company or, more importantly, our customers. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Gallagher, representing Portland General Electric. To take up much of your time, we too support this bill. When your regulator comes to you and wants more money, you agree.
Thank you for that excellent testimony, Mr. Gallagher. Mr. Bissonnette, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. We represent the residential ratepayers of the utilities, practice a lot in front of the PUC, and we too are in support of this bill, and customers pay a little, get a lot, through the services and the regulation that the PUC provides, and we're happy to be part of that process, and it definitely needs to be funded adequately, and the bill should pass. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions of these gentlemen? Alrighty then. Thank you, guys. Would anyone else like to testify today to House Bill 2053? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2053 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2619 and call our good friend Representative Holby, Steve Delaney, and Richard Farrell, please.
Yes, I will.
And Representative, whenever you're ready to go, just start right off.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thanks for hearing this bill. This is House Bill 2169, and it allows police officers to receive additional service time credit with the Public Employees Retirement System for prior work completed as a police or public safety officer in another state.
Question. Oh, Representative, did you identify yourself for the record?
For the record, I'm State Representative Paul Holby from District 8.
Clarification of the bill number.
Oh, excuse me.
I believe it's 2619.
Oh, forgive me. I'm the one.
2619.
We got that squared away. Thank you, Representative.
Sorry, I had a typo. And I'm also a little bit dyslexic sometimes.
You're doing a great job.
This drives my staff crazy. So, but in any respect, I brought this bill forward after discussing this issue with Richard Farrell, who's sitting with me, a Lane County Deputy Sheriff, and realizing its potential as a recruiting tool for attracting experienced and knowledgeable public safety officers to meet Oregon's projected future needs. In this bill, eligible police officers have the option to purchase up to 4 years of additional or credit through a one-time full-cost lump sum payment within 90 days of retirement. A full-cost purchase means the police officer purchasing the credit bears all the costs associated with granting this additional service, including PERS administrative costs. Only police officers, as defined in PERS statutes, may apply for these credits. Additionally, a member is not eligible if they are entitled to a pension or other retirement allowance in the state of their previous service. I urge you to move this bill to a work session at some point in the future. I think this bill will help address one of the needs of this state, not just of the state police, but county sheriffs, city police. We do have a shortage of those workers, and we need something to help us attract those because of our substandard pay for those, I might add. Thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen, Sheriff, would you like to go ahead?
Yes, my name is Richard Farrell. I live in Springfield, Oregon, at 301 69th Place, and I'm currently a member of the Lane County Sheriff's Office.
Excuse me.
And I'm representing the members of the law enforcement community throughout Oregon who have served in other states other than the fine state of Oregon itself. This bill, I feel, honors and acknowledges the experience of those individuals that have served here in Oregon as well as in other states. I believe the individuals deserve this bill to go forward, and I feel that these individuals would be able to take advantage of this bill. And like Representative Holvey said, they would be limited to 4 years or less to apply towards their retirement pension. And I think this is a fair bill. I think it's a good bill. And I ask you to move this bill forward with your approval, HB 2619. And I thank you for your time and your consideration in this matter.
Thank you, Deputy. I gave you a promotion there when I introduced it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe someday, right? All right. Thank you. Mr. Delaney?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of PERS. While the PERS Board hasn't taken a position on HB 2619, I am available to answer questions for the committee. One question that is commonly asked, I want to make clear, is whether this has a cost to employers. Because it is a full cost purchase, it does not carry a cost to employers. It is something borne by the member making the purchase.
Thank you. Any questions, Representative Rosenbaum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Farrell and Representative Holvey, do you know, is this a provision that other states have in their retirement plans or make possible as a recruiting technique?
Well, I know the state of Oregon has this provision for other persons in the system, and maybe Mr. Delaney could actually shed some light on that better than either Mr. Farrell or I.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I'm not personally aware. There may well be. We just have never done a study of other states to find out if these are offered. But Representative Holvey is correct that there are already three existing classes that can make this purchase within Oregon PERS, not persons that have been off on a non-duty disability, people that have military time prior to PERS service, and school teachers who taught in other states can all make this type of full cost purchase.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? No questions? All righty then. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm going to call up Larry Campbell and Brian DeLashman, please.
Duty before age.
Which am I?
Whichever one you guys want to start first, go ahead.
For the record, Brian DeLashment, representing actually several groups today, the Oregon State Police Officers Association, commonly referred to as the Troopers, and the Oregon Council of Police Associations, which in fact is a statewide organization of line staff, cities and counties, deputies, and a number of other organizations. The basis of the bill has been laid out. We would support the bill. As was stated, there are already several provisions. Military and teachers have the same provision. When Representative Holvey approached me on this, I did do a little research with the Oregon State Police Officers Association and got a little history lesson about the volume of applications. If you go back some time ago, about 20 years ago, when they'd have a recruiting class that would run between 40 and 50 cadets, they would have up to 800 applicants for those slots. Now when they have a recruiting class, they're lucky to get 80 applicants for 40 slots. So in order to beef up OSP along with a lot of the local law enforcement, we think this is a good opportunity to expand this to include police officers. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Chairman Schaffler and members of the committee, Larry Campbell, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police. And this is really kind of an interesting one for us because we have basically developed a special task force of Oregon Association Chiefs of Police to focus on law enforcement hiring and retention. And the reason for this, of course, is the fact that we have found that there's a lot of complaints about the theft of officers, primarily theft of officers by large communities, of small communities, and it's because of the difference in salary levels. And in looking at this, it looks to us like this is a good recruiting tool. And we sent a notice out to our chiefs and asked them for comments. And I was particularly interested in one comment. I wanted to share it with the committee because I won't give you the whole comment because I also will not identify the chief, but he says, I agree this would be a great recruiting tool. It would allow me to employ an officer from Idaho where wages are dismal and they could buy into our retirement system. That's a real benefit to them. And so from that perspective, we are very supportive of what they're attempting to do here. And, of course, we have our own reasons for being supportive. So it may be a little different than Representative Hovey, who has an actual constituent who would benefit from this. But we think that benefit is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you. Any questions? Well, seeing none, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Would anyone else, I don't have anyone else signed up, would anyone else like to testify to House Bill 2619 today? All right, seeing no one, I'm going to close a public hearing on 2619. Just go right in order now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to open a public hearing on 2635, please.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2635 is from Representative Hunt. It expands the definition of a family member under the Oregon Family Leave Act to allow an eligible employee to take family leave from work to care for a grandparent or a grandchild.
Okay, and was there some written testimony?
Yes, we'll pass that out.
Okay, good. All right, well, we have my friend Chris Groner from Clackamas County, I think, still here to testify on this bill. Are you ready, Chris?
All right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Groner, and I live with my grandmother, Eva Joan Rich, in Oregon City, Oregon. And in spite of my last name, I'll try and make this testimony brief so you guys can get on your way. First of all, I'd like to thank Representative Hunt for drafting this bill. I had talked with him about this prior to session and really appreciate his efforts and glad to know that there are legislators such as himself and others that recognize the importance of caring for our family members in their time of need. Mr. Chair, House Bill 2635 would simply expand the Oregon Family Medical Leave Act to include grandparents and grandchildren. As you may already be aware, the current law, both state and federal, actually, law, only recognize immediate family members and domestic partners as being eligible for leave from work to care for a sick family member. I think it's important to recognize what we mean, what the term family means in this day of age. More and more we're seeing a cultural return to the extended family. Now, whether this families in which parents are not just people or families don't just have parents living with themselves, but sisters, cousins, grandparents, and grandchildren, for example, as myself. Excuse me, I lost my thought. We've seen this trend, and whether that trend is being caused by a continually depressing economic condition, forcing families to pool their resources and financial resources, or a reflection of our society in other areas, the need for these expanded protections in this bill are real. As I stated earlier, my grandmother Rich lives with me. This situation came about a little over a year ago due to the recent death of my grandfather at the time. Now, while my grandmother is at times extremely spirited, mentally and often even physically, although she's all of 4'9", she's a cancer survivor three times over, and she's on her third hip at the moment. She's had two hip replacement surgeries, so she has trouble caring for herself fully at times, and more times than not, I should say. As a family, we decided not to put her in a care facility. Instead, we made the commitment to pull together and provide her the care she needs in a more comfortable and loving setting. While my family is but one example of Oregon citizens that would benefit from this bill, that we're certainly not alone. There are several hundreds, if not thousands, I would guess, families in similar situations across the state. Just in Clackamas County alone, as I was driving up this morning, I think I ticked off just in my head of friends and family that I know over about 20 in such situations, usually where it's the grandparent helping out a single parent and taking care of a child, getting them to a doctor's appointment, staying home with them when they're sick or others. So in fact, my father is in the same situation. My niece and my sister currently live with my father, and there are a number of times when either my mother or my father have to take the time to help take care of my niece, Cassidy. So that said, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm simply asking that you support this bill and pass it make a due pass recommendation out of committee.
Thank you, Chris. Any questions for Mr. Groner? So did your grandma have a choice between your dad's house and your house, didn't she?
Actually, to be honest, Mr. Chair, I found a house two doors down from my dad's house that was available to rent. So it's kind of, we all get to share.
God bless you. Okay. All right. If there's no further questions for Mr. Groner, thank you very much. Would anyone else like to, and this is a good bill, too.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would like to comment.
Representative Berger,
yeah,
please.
That's an interesting story that you're living to, because I think we are starting to realize that this physical proximity of family is important generationally. I think it's an interesting situation you have, and I applaud you for it.
Thank you.
Well, while we're on that, my mom just moved from Webster City, Iowa, to Chicago to live with my sister and her husband, because my older brother can barely take care of himself, let alone an aging parent. So we're all living this story,
yep,
to some extent. All righty then. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to testify to House Bill 2635? All right. Seeing no one, I'm going to close the hearing on 2635 and open the public hearing on 2622.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2622 is actually brought to you by the Business and Labor Committee. It prohibits Oregon Youth Authority employees who have custody, control, or supervision of youth offenders from striking.
Okay, I have Mary Botkin and Colleen Savage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, and I am going to follow suit and be very brief. Let me just, in way of background, explain to folks what this bill does practically, and then I'll have Colleen talk about it as well. There are two ways to settle a labor dispute in the state of Oregon. One is through binding arbitration for non-strikeable units, and the other is through a strike. Practically speaking, we have moved public safety personnel almost to a person into non-strikeable units because we find that public interest is better served by having folks stay on the job and finding a different alternative to resolve labor disputes. And all binding arbitration unit, all we do with that unit is we go to a third party jointly selected by labor and management, and whatever that third party decides is binding on both sides. And it is a very simple process. And right now, these juvenile parole officers, none of us are exactly sure why they're not already in binding arbitration. They are required to work 24/7 if their caseload requires that, and they handle some of the most dangerous kids in the state, and I'm going to let Colleen talk about that part of it. But I just wanted to give you some background as to what the two resolutions for labor disputes are, and that this provides an alternative which is less painful on all parties, and it's a good way to resolve labor disputes for public safety personnel.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Colleen Savage, and I'm an AFSCME representative. I have worked with the parole officers for the Oregon Youth Authority for about 10 years. And to answer Mary's question as to why we have never been in the non-strikeable arena, we just had other things to deal with, and now we're stepping up to the plate. I asked if the parole officers could come today, and they were not able to because they're in court with the youth that live in Oregon. So I asked them to just put some very brief things as to why they should be considered non-strikeable, and that is what this paper is. And the second sheet shows where all of them are in the state of Oregon and how many of them. I took the liberty of making bold number 6, which is most importantly, we keep the community safe. When a youth is in crisis, that's who they call, the parole officer. And so we respectfully ask you to consider our request.
Thank you. Any questions of these nice ladies today? You guys did such a great job.
Just like an easy committee.
All right. We're very nice.
You're nice always a nice committee.
Or worn out. One of the
yeah. Well, okay. You did a good job.
Wait a minute.
Representative
yeah,
Berger.
I'm looking at this. We're talking about... We're not talking about... We're talking about the... parole officers, Mr. Chair, not the people inside the facility.
That is correct, Representative Berger. The people inside the facility, the group life coordinators, already are non-strikeable.
Under which?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, this does not extend itself, this bill does not extend itself to local juvenile facilities. This is only facilities covered by the Oregon Youth Authority, and those folks are all state employees. The only institutional employees that are covered by OYA are Hillcrest and McLaren and a couple of little group home or community facilities, but they're not county. They're not county facilities. These are only state facilities. So it does not extend itself to any of the local government facilities.
Okay, so it's parole and probation officers basically for
the state of Oregon, employed by the Oregon Youth Authority, and those facilities are already, the institutional workers in OYA are already covered.
Under what statute?
Under the same statute.
Guard at a correctional institution or mental health?
Actually, if you look at the language that was,
Mr. Chairman,
yes, Representative Holden.
I think the only thing that's being added here is the employee of the Oregon Youth Authority who has custody control or supervision of youth offenders. That's the only thing that's being added to this statute. All the other folks already are included as having this.
Well, yeah, and that was the way I read it. But then I said, then she said the what would be essentially guards rather than parole or probation folks are already included in Hillcrest in the state ones, and are they included under this language that they are guards at a correctional institution, or is it some other statutory reference that they're covered under?
They are covered under a separate statutory reference.
OYA.
Yes.
There is another one I've seen.
Yes.
Okay, that helps me on that. And I have one other little tricky little thing, Mr. Chair, that I see that they are doing, I think, the right thing in cleaning up the language of the statute by reordering it differently and making it real clear. But I also recall we had a conversation about with another bill regarding the emergency telephone workers, and they called themselves something else, telecommunicators. And I'm wondering if we are going to that language. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yes.
And I was wondering if we were moving to that language statutorially, and if we were, we might want to consider that here. And that's the question of staff. It doesn't have anything to do with it.
Well, I have to say, Representative, I can check with Ledwith Council on that to see what the stamp on that.
Okay, so we're talking about the same people.
Yes. You're
okay.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
We want to be consistent throughout, if possible.
I don't have any problem with making that change
just,
at all.
It's just if we're cleaning up the language, which way are we going on that? And if we're not going to change their name, then emergency telephone worker is fine with me, as defined here.
Ms. Botkin, if you want to go talk to the lawyers, we'll do that. Because we're not going to change it here, I promise you that.
If we could keep this bill moving on, we could check with LC and change it in the Senate and bring it back if we need to.
Well,
I don't like to do that.
Well, Mr. Churchill, actually, on the bill that Representative Berger mentioned, there is an amendment actually in development, which perhaps that could be incorporated. It's just a food for thought.
This is a first public hearing. We're going to have another one, and we're going to clarify all this before that one. Is Parrot Creek in Clackamas County, is that Oregon Youth Authority? That's county? Yeah, okay. All righty then. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Would anyone else like to speak to House Bill 2622 today? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2622. Is there anything for the good of the order today? All right. We're standing adjourned.
Have a good weekend.